Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumery. Thank you for tuning in. A citizen ballot proposition that would add a new seasonal sales tax will appear on the local ballot this fall election. That's after advocates for it gained more than 3,200 signatures of support. The tax is intended to boost funding for the city's recreational facilities. Michael Cole is one of the residents behind the proposition. He says it saw an overwhelming amount of support from the public. The group gathered more than 600 additional signatures, then required to secure a spot on the ballot.
We need to be healthy, and recreation, whether it be swimming or hockey or whatever, you know, is a big part of being able to maintain that healthiness.
The ballot proposition seeks to implement a 1% seasonal sales tax, as you know, during the tourism season from April 1st to September 30th. Right now, the city taxes residents at 5%. The additional 1% seasonal tax is intended to help fund the city's indoor and outdoor recreation. According to city tax data estimates, the proposition would bring in nearly $7 million more in revenue to the city annually. The proposition comes after the June Assembly said it was considering cutting services or closing some recreational facilities this spring due to a multi-million dollar budget gap. The Assembly ultimately spared the closures of Juno's Pools and Diamond Park Fieldhouse after public outcry, but voted in favor of closing the Mountain Jumbo Gym on Douglas Island. Cole says the group heard some pushback from residents during the signature gathering who were worried about the tax's impact on seasonal businesses. But he said most people understood the reasons behind the proposition and supported the idea. Another citizen ballot proposition could also appear on the ballot. It seeks to raise the city's caps on the local property tax rate, also known as the mill rate, back to where it was before voters approved lowering it last fall. Supporters of the proposition are currently gathering signatures of support, which are due back to the city on June 17th. Election day is November 6th. Six new firefighters officially joined Capital City Fire Rescue after completing a year-long apprenticeship. It was the first year of this paid apprenticeship program in Juneau, and it helps the agency fill a staffing shortage. KTOO was at the pinning ceremony on Sunday.
Platinum, on the Bering Sea coast, is a truly tiny town. It has less than 50 residents. But when it comes to local and tribal elections, administrators make sure traveling even small distances within town doesn't get in the way of voting.
We'll go to elderly homes and present the ballots because they're hard to get around for them.
Lou Adams is the acting tribal administrator for Platinum Village Traditional Council. She says organizers present ballots in English and Yupik to make voting materials accessible to everyone. She says almost everyone votes, but when it came to the last general election, it was a different story.
There was hardly any involvement because of the ballots came in really late.
Adams says all of Platinum's residents have to vote absentee by mail because the village is too small to have a polling place. Over 4,000 Alaskans fall into this category, living in what the State Division of Elections designates as permanent absentee jurisdictions. But in Platinum, voting by mail can be tricky. The village doesn't have its own post office. To get their mail to town, the community dispatches people in pairs by snow machine or boat to the neighboring community of Good News Bay. If the weather is bad or the bay is half frozen, Adams says residents can go weeks without mail.
The longest is about maybe almost 2 months. Because if it's not freezing right and it doesn't freeze right away, and it takes longer, so we have to wait on that.
People across the state vote by mail for all kinds of reasons. Some because of disability or lack of in-person voting opportunity. Others might just want to. In the last general election, over 70,000 Alaskans voted absentee by mail. And in November, when the general election happens, weather can create all kinds of delays. Richard Moses is an Alaska-based campaign and election lawyer. He's represented parties involved in ballot recounts and has seen the late arrivals firsthand.
One of them was from out in Western Alaska, was postmarked prior to Election Day and still arrived, like, it was 7 or 8 days after the deadlines.
For Alaska voters residing in the U.S., the state allows mail-in ballots to be counted as long as they are postmarked by Election Day and arrive no later than 10 days after a general election. But a Supreme Court decision could change that. The court is currently considering a Republican Party challenge to a Mississippi law that counts mail-in ballots similarly to how Alaska does. In their court brief, Republican Party lawyers said that delayed counting violates federal law that nationally sets an election day. Alaska's attorney general filed a brief with the court that did not take a side, but did explain the challenges Alaskans face when voting. Moses, who has represented both Democrats and Republicans, says if the law is struck down, it would affect Alaska significantly.
You know, we live in a state where diphtheria serum had to be delivered 1,000 miles on a dog sled, not that long ago, actually. And so any change to the electoral process in any way is going to be groundbreaking here.
Michelle Spark runs the nonpartisan effort Get Out the Native Vote. It operates under the Alaska Federation of Natives, which filed an amicus brief in the case. It says discounting late arriving ballots would disenfranchise many Native voters in Alaska and other places who are often in remote communities.
It's not good to mess with these things, especially during an election year.
Under the proposed change, voters could still vote by mail. They'll just have to send their ballots in earlier. In Alaska's rural areas, voters can request their ballots 45 days early. But Spark says a lot can change in the weeks before an election.
When everybody has the luxury until 8 p.m. on election day to make their decisions, it's not fair to put the burden on us to vote as soon as possible.
If a change went into effect before this November, Alaska political watchers say it could affect the consequential Senate race between Democrat Mary Peltola and Republican Dan Sullivan. Peltola faces headwinds in a state that went to Trump by 13 points in the last election, though analysts say many of Peltola's supporters live in rural areas that could be impacted by a mail-in voting change. In Platinum, counting late arriving ballots is about more than just election outcomes. It's about the principle of having a vote. Lou Adams again.
Well, it's kind of disheartening. You want your vote to be counted. That's why you vote, so you can maybe make a difference and they count your ballot.
She says the community is hoping to get a polling place. Until then, voting will continue to rely on boats, snow machines, and bush planes. In Platinum, I'm Samantha Watson.
And Alaska is one of 29 states that allows at least some late arriving ballots to be counted as long as they're postmarked on or before Election Day. But as KYUK Samantha Watson reports, a U.S. Supreme Court ruling could complicate that, especially for voters in the bush. Assistant Fire Chief Sam Russell led the program. At the ceremony, he handed each apprentice a badge that a loved one fastened to them.
We're going to badge them today as firefighters. They completed their certification testing last week. We're still waiting on some written test results, but I have no doubts, so we're going to badge them as firefighters.
Russell also gave them each a yellow helmet.
Firefighters wear yellow. These guys have been wearing black for about a year.
Last year, the apprentices finished their EMT certifications. Then they spent the spring running ambulance calls and finishing Firefighter 1 training. They could only respond to fires from the outside. Now, they're fully certified firefighters, and they can go inside burning buildings. Russell said that while the graduating apprentices learned from the department, they also helped him learn how to make the first year of the program successful.
I'm really proud of these guys for sticking it out, for doing the work, and for helping me build the program the way it is. Without their patience and initiative, they wouldn't be successful in either with the program. So with that, these are our apprentices.
There was one empty seat. One apprentice missed the ceremony because he volunteered to take an overtime shift and was on a call. Kyson Cunningham is the youngest apprentice. He joined the program straight out of high school. He said the department trained him thoroughly, and he feels ready to take on challenges Juno throws at him.
I'm just excited, really. I mean, I'm excited to go into the buildings and go interior. We've been on many fire scenes and we know how it operates and works. And now instead of assisting on the outside, we're able to go inside and assist.
Lillian Thorington joined the program later than the other apprentices. She's finishing her degree at UAS and gained her EMT certificate as a volunteer firefighter.
And I was able to actually jump in kind of halfway through the program, which definitely was a challenge because I was a little behind everyone. But what was really amazing was everyone was willing to help me.
She said her success is due to the people she works with in Juneau.
I'm really lucky, you know, to have the people in our department. I don't think I would have been able to be nearly as successful without them.
Capital City Fire Rescue plans to take on 4 more apprentices this year. Assistant Fire Chief Russell says staff will start interviewing applicants this week. The apprentices officially joined the department as the City and Borough of Juneau and the local firefighters union reached a contract agreement after 11 months of deliberations. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. And Planned Parenthood of Alaska is suing the state to expand access to abortion medication via telehealth. Under Alaska law, people seeking a medication-induced abortion must go in person to a clinic, which is usually limited to Anchorage or Fairbanks. The lawsuit was filed Thursday in Alaska Superior Court. Lead case attorney for Planned Parenthood, Dylan Cowhit, says restricting access to a medically induced abortion violates the Alaska right to privacy and the fundamental right to an abortion.
Because it places a burden on their access to abortion. And the Alaska Supreme Court has made clear that when the state places a burden on abortion, they can only do so if there's a compelling reason to do it. And here, there's no reason, let alone a compelling one.
Alaska's constitution includes the right to privacy, and that's long been interpreted to guarantee access to abortion. In an email, Acting Attorney General Corey Mills declined to comment on the lawsuit. Dr. Colleen McNicholas is a chief medical officer of the Planned Parenthood affiliate. She says medications are only an option for patients who've been pregnant fewer than 12 weeks. And she says in Alaska, the burden of travel to a clinic makes medication abortion too difficult to access.
Every week, in fact, we see folks who, by the time they have made it to clinic to have their medication abortion, they have aged out of eligibility for that service and now have to sort of start the process all over again in trying to figure out, okay, medication abortion is no longer an option for me. So how am I going to get procedural abortion?
McNicholas says about a quarter of abortions nationwide are by medication. And it's 55 degrees and raining this afternoon. And it looks like we'll have a dry rest of the week with temperatures from the high 40s to the mid 60s. This is KTOO.